Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? It's the 2nd of January 2020, and we couldn't think of a better way to ring in the new year than with a nice, shiny new episode. And this week, we welcome Simon Neil, who is the frontman from Scottish rock band Biffy Clyro. More of that in a sec. So how are you? How was your Christmas? Calm? Chaotic? Mine certainly was. To be honest, I'm pretty pleased it's over. After Boxing Day, I'm like, right, should we just get back to work? But, you know, that's just me. So, short intro this week. It was in December. We met up with Simon. He came to meet us in Manchester. It was our last episode recording of the year. So instead of a cup of tea, we cracked open a couple of cans and hit record. This is episode 109, I think, of the Two Shot Podcast with Simon Neil. Enjoy. I shall see you at the end.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, and I'm still doing that TV show until February. Mm. So, but now I had this time free, and I knew that Griff had limited time free, and it's just about getting your ducks in a row. It's always just about the timing with people, and especially doing what you do as well.
Well, trying to fit your own schedule, it's tough enough when it's just other folks' schedules or just your own. But when you're trying to combine both, it's a nightmare.
But then when the stars align, and you're right, I'm going to be in this. I'm going to be there, and you've got some good folk on. Yeah, really good.
And I love it.
It's just always surprises me when people say, "Oh no, yeah, I'll do it. I'll come on."
Yeah, I think. Well, it's a nice thought, and it's because just the nature of it as well. You get nice conversational quality in that way. It's nice to be on something, not always talking about a project or promoting something. You know, it feels like that's all we ever do. You know, like I'm sure when you're in the rounds.
It's funny you say that because I was talking to. I was talking to a chef the other day, which, I mean, people listening to this now will go, oh, yeah, that was weeks ago, or they haven't heard it yet. Because we don't really know when they put these things out.
Of course.
And I was saying, you know, sometimes I get a bit scared with people who I don't know at all, especially one of the first musicians I did. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the first musician I did was Bill Ryder Jones.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, but I knew.
His stuff's amazing.
It's incredible stuff.
Such a talent. It's unreal.
And it's, you know, it's so deep and it's so personal. So I knew that we had a lot to talk about. Okay. And then when I booked Gaz Coombs to come on.
Yeah, okay.
I was thinking, right, with musicians, the amount of time what they do is they go and promote a song or an album. So they'll have 7 or 12 minutes chat with Jules Holland.
Yeah, exactly. and then nothing.
And then they play the songs. So fuck, what if we're not going to have like a nice conversation? Can we talk about the past? Can we talk about this? Can we talk about what?
The guy's one was great. It was interesting to hear his chat about Spielberg.
Yeah, I remembered it, but I wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
Because things just go down different avenues, don't they?
You're never sure how true it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it seems it's even been more clear cut than I thought.
Yeah, I know. It was even better than what I remembered.
No,
it was.
Thanks, Steve. You're all right. Imagine that. It's like, no, it wasn't the right time. You know, it served them well.
It's doing all right though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that was my worry. And it is still my worry with people. But I think
Do you have much preparation? Sorry, forgive me.
Well, I do. The minimal amount of what I need to begin a conversation, and then because I'm the way I like to work with this is I want to be as much of an audience member as the listener is.
Yeah, so
but also I've got two hats on because I need to conduct and I need to navigate and I need to know where we're going.
Have the knowledge but also, still be surprised.
But still be surprised. Yeah, do you know?
Yeah, it's
so it's because it was funny because I was talking to a friend of mine this morning. I was listening to an actor be interviewed on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And the interviewer was exactly that. She was an interviewer. I don't really like to class things as an interview because and it was like she obviously had a list of set questions that she wanted to ask.
Okay.
And she did. So just for example, she would ask this first question and the person opposite would answer. And she was very free and open and going on all sorts of tangents and going down different rabbit holes. But then the interviewer didn't pick up on that. She just asked the second question that was on the list. And I just think, oh, it's quite clinical.
I know. It takes the wind out your sails, actually, in an interview. I'm sure it's happened to you. Because you do feel like, oh, we could talk about anything here and you kind of touch on something. And then it's straight back to, and you're doing this next week. You know, and you're like, okay, it's just one of those. Because you kind of make up your mind almost in an interview what it is, whether it's a conversation, which is obviously the more, the more enjoyable option, or literally, cool, we'll tick our boxes, you tick your boxes, and we won't discover anything about each other, but that's absolutely fine, you know?
But then I always think, well, what?
I know, what's the point?
Well, it's not doing... Yeah, exactly. One, what's the point? It's not servicing any of us as, if it's an interviewer and it's a very coarse term, the subject.
Is that what it's reduced to?
Not on this podcast.
Not in this
side,
bloody
blog. But, and also to the listener, because it puts me off.
Yeah.
Because I go, or maybe it's the hat that I've got on now since I've been doing this for a couple of years that I tune into things differently.
Yeah, you know what you would do, how you would, where you would take.
Yeah, and not in a sort of big-headed way going, oh, well, I'd do that differently. I don't mean it like that. It's just like, oh, why didn't you do that? Because it would be so much more interesting if we.
I think people are smarter now as well. Though I think people can recognise, you know, the general public, you know, in a wider sense, can recognise when someone is doing that and just, I'm here because I have to, or I'm doing the interview because I have to, and it's like literally, can't wait to get out of here. And I think people are kind of sick of that these days because there's so much information now. It's like, we don't need more information, you know?
No, I know.
You need to discover things, you know, to try and...
Well, that's why everybody needs to know more about the human.
The human side.
Instead of, I know, I'm sure it's a great album. And I'm sure the process was long and tough when you're in that studio in Iceland that you thought would be very experimental.
It's like red rum. But especially with actors as well, you must, you know, because what you do for a living is kind of represent perhaps someone else's kind of point of view or perspective. And it's so interesting to really discover who someone is when you know them as so many different people.
Well,
you know, and maybe that's something that a lot of actors want to keep close to themselves. You know?
Well, it's funny because some do and some don't. Some loathe talking about and having interviews and talking about the character and the process and selling the telly or the film or whatever it is. And so they'll just clam up and they just want to get it over and done with as quick as possible with the interviewer who doesn't really care and he's asking the same stock questions that they've just done for seven interviews. But I'm sure do you find that when you're promoting albums?
Yeah, I'm sure it's similar to you guys. It's early, you know, your profession, it's like a mad junket. You do basically like a week or so of like really intense some days. In certain countries, you can be hitting like 16 interviews in a day.
Yeah.
And by the end, you're not even thinking. It's almost like a muscle memory thing. And you're like, oh, there's the key word from the question, you know. And that's my least favourite thing. It's a kind of necessary evil, you know.
It becomes part and parcel of, right, well, it's the end of it now. And this is the thing that we have to do. It's the same
exactly.
When you're promoting a TV show or a film.
And to me, I always view that as the kind of work aspect, because we're very lucky we all get to do what we enjoy, you know.
Yeah.
There's obviously moments of stress and work when you're on a job, but that's the point where I think, you know what, if I just have to suck this up for a couple of days, you know, then just get in the head zone, headspace, and it's fine, you know. How did you guys hook up?
I figured that I wanted to sort of try to learn about how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was off filming in Northern Ireland, and listeners will, you can switch off for a bit. You've heard this before, I'm sure. If not, maybe you're new to the podcast and you can listen to the story again.
Yeah.
And I was filming with Vicky McClaw in Belfast, and I went out for a steak, and I was telling her, I've kind of got the seed of an idea that I want to learn how to really talk to people proper. Uh-huh.
But you had you learned it for a while.
I kind of had the idea because I was listening to a lot of podcasts and I was shunning a lot of scripts away because they weren't really inspiring. And
is that an instinctual thing for you is it kind of immediate, you know whether you're going to feel a connection?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because it's all about the character at the end of the day.
Okay.
You know? I mean, I'm sure it's the same if you, because I know a few musicians, and a friend of mine, his friend went off to write an album, and they'd written it, and just before they're about to record, he went, "No, I'm not happy with this," and literally tore everything up. Whoa. And we have to really start again, because he was obviously writing it, and he, whether he was in a good place or not, but he got it all down, but just before, "No, I'm not happy with that."
Okay.
So you've got to, I suppose you've got to feel it. Is that the same with writing?
Yeah.
For you?
I mean, I can write the songs for our band, and I try and not analyse what I make until like a later date. So between albums, I'll just write kind of as many songs as kind of come out in as natural a way as possible. And it's normally between 20 or 30, by the time we've kind of toured for a while, it's normally 18 months to 2 years before we perhaps look at making another record. So in that time, I've probably compiled about 20 or 30 songs. And that's when I start to kind of feel my connection to the songs, because it's the human nature is basically the newest thing you make. Initially, you're like, "Oh, this is the best thing ever." And then perhaps it takes a month or two. And
yeah.
For us, it's like, for me, it's I have to listen to the songs. It's not playing the songs that kind of tells me whether it's a good tune or not. For me, it's I need to kind of let it flow over me. And so we've just like got our new mixes for this new album now, and I'm finally able to kind of fully tell how much I'm enjoying the record.
Oh, right, so after you've recorded?
Yeah, well, to be fair, that's actually not quite right, because the first level of that is actually when we demo all the songs. So we would record the first like 25 songs.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I let it wash all over me, and then I'll know what, you know, the 12 to 15 songs that are the ones that are really still connecting with me, either giving me goosebumps or there's lyrics in it where I'm like, "That's really, I really like what I'm hitting on there." And then I hone in a little bit in those songs. So it was wrong of me to say that's the mode I'm in at the moment, because now it's just made. It's finished, you know, and I'm sure you're the same. There's a liberation to finishing a project, you know, because I can accept any errors, mistakes, or if something could be better, because it's now done. It's a thing. It kind of feels like a living, breathing thing now.
And once you chuck it out into the world, you go, "Well, there's nothing more I can do with it now." In a way, I suppose, I know some writers, and not necessarily of songs, or authors and script writers and playwriters, and they would go, "Well, it ceases to become mine now."
Mm-hmm.
Because I've thrown it out there, and I can't change that.
Yeah.
So you do with that what you will.
Yeah, and it's quite a nice. Do you feel that a little? Like, how do you feel with the podcast as well? Because that's a different. Because you're letting people into a different side of who you are and everything. Did that initially, was that strange, kind of being the real, you know, not the real you, but you know what I mean?
No, was I know. I do know exactly what you mean.
Because sometimes I'm like, really, "Oh, have I said too much?"
We're having a drink now, so I'm letting you ask me questions. Is this the ploy, Simon? Is this the, I never let people do this. Yeah, it is. And it was, Griff will tell you, the first one I ever did was with one of my best friends try and ease it in, because I'd never done it before. And it's always a very terrifying thing, being grounded and being yourself. Because I used to hate doing interviews, like, oh, God, it was just
was the
worst thing in the world. I don't want to divulge anything about it. Talk about the character? And even then I would feel really embarrassed about talking about the character.
And it was still a character.
You go, "Oh, God, I don't want to sound like some sort of wanky, earnest
That's
actor."
The northern side, isn't it?
Yeah, it really
anyone
is.
Anyone from northern Britain, I think, just has that similar thing. If you talk too much about yourself for too long, you're like, "Well, no, I can't do this. This is nonsense. I can't talk about me." And was your... So...
I'm not answering any more questions from you, Simon.
Grifter, I'm totally grilling them.
Do you know why? It's because you're too fucking nice. That's why.
All right, okay, well, let's get to the nitty gritty.
You always seem so happy.
I know. If only life were that simple. I know.
Hey, well, we all know life is very difficult.
Oh, I know.
Do you think, you know, I was talking about that, I was having a conversation with a chef not so long ago, and he was, we were talking about difficult professions, and some people always say to me, oh, God, you're an actor, that must be, oh, how do you do that? It's very, must be very difficult. And when I think about sort of careers within the creative industry, I always cite being a musician and running your own restaurant as being really brutal and difficult, because, you know, you get to that age when you're in a teenager, come on, let's join us, form a band, we can do this, we can take over the world. And also, you see a good restaurant and that close within 6 months and they've pumped all that money into
it. The sacrifice that chefing and things like that takes, you know, even from their apprenticeships when they're like, you know, 7 nights a week and they're working 10, 12-hour shifts. And I don't know how, like, that's pure Sisyphus, you know, it's like that is just, you're pushing that boulder up the hill, and it is kind of the same as a band. And
but surely, like, when you started, were you 15-ish when you
this
formed?
This is our high school band. So, yeah, we started this.
But you must be carefree then. There's no pressure. There certainly mustn't be as much pressure as there is.
I think we were really lucky because we were very naive when we started. You know, we grew up in...
You were 15, you're supposed to be
not too world-weary at that point. Yeah. But we didn't know anyone that played music or anything really in our part of the world.
And let's just for listeners, we need to geographically place where we are.
Sure. Well, me and the other boys in the band, we grew up in Ayrshire, west coast of Scotland, just south of Glasgow. Glasgow's always had been a really vibing city. You know, I don't know if you spent much time there.
I have. I've worked there many times.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course,
I love it.
It's really great.
And some great restaurants as well.
Edinburgh's the pretty one, but Glasgow's the vibing one. So we had no ambition, which seems so unusual to say, but we literally, all I wanted to do was write a song initially that I could say, could we play the song such and such, and we would play it, and it was like, wow, we've made it. So it was very small steps to start, and I think that was what boded well for us, because we didn't have a 5-year plan. We didn't think, the bands we liked were never popular.
What kind of bands? Were you all of the same mindset of the bands that you liked?
Yeah, we were. I mean, Ben and James went through their Two Unlimited phase, as we all probably did the early 90s.
But there's no limit, Simon.
There is no limit.
Oh, come on.
Reach for the sky.
I'm sorry. I apologise. We'll edit that bit out.
We're due a Two Unlimited resurgence. It's going to happen at some point. Just your usual kind of, like, I guess, pre-teenage nonsense, and then my life changed for better or worse when I saw a Guns N' Roses video in the telly, and that was being, like, you know, a kid in Scotland growing up in the grey part of the world, and just seeing these weird alien figures from the other side of the world that would wear, like, leather hot pants and stuff. You know, and as a child I was, like, just obsessed, and I've always been quite obsessive. You know, if I'm into something, I'm really mad.
Just sort of go tunnel vision about that thing.
Yes, and then like 18 months, 2 years later, you'll never hear me mention it again, which is, you know.
Would you be one of those that if you got an album, you would just absolutely play the shit out of it again and again until you go, yeah, it's unpalatable, can't have.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. And I've ruined some of my favourite albums that way. You know, just almost when I put it on, it's too familiar now.
Hold on it, though. I certainly have, yeah.
Good. That's a kind of grown-up side of it as well. That to me is what makes music so special, because it's almost an entirely personal experience as a listener. You know, I know obviously there's, you know, clubs or gigs or whatever, and it's communal, but generally the first time you hear a record that you're interested in or excited about, it's kind of by yourself.
Yeah.
And the head...
It speaks... You take something from it that maybe Tom, Dick and Harry, they take something completely different.
Exactly that. Yeah, because you interpret it through what you're going through at that time in your life and the experiences you've had, the music you've listened to before and things. So I like... that's what I kind of focus on almost when I'm making music, is I try and think of that one-on-one listener with the listener, you know.
Have you always thought like that? Or do you think that's morphed and grown over time?
I think I've always thought like that. I think I've kind of tried to maintain that thought process as the band has gotten slightly more popular and things over the years. Because growing up in a small town and you know, I spent a lot of time in my bedroom playing guitar, you know, and watching movies and things. And I feel like that was how I really fell in love with music and with certain bands. So I still, that's how I visualise people listening to our album, is almost how I used to do it, you know, for better or worse. And I know times have moved on a lot since then, so I'm not a Luddite, you know. I know that people consume music differently these days.
Of course, yeah.
But that's still what I visualise.
It should still be there.
It should be, you know, I wouldn't want my reason for doing this to change in a massive way. You know, ambitions change and your experiences allow you to try different things. But my actual reason for picking up the guitar, I wouldn't ever want to change. And that gets harder. That definitely gets harder the longer you do things, is to try and retain that kind of naivety and excitement, innocence about what you do. Because I believe with any kind of art form, you can sometimes know too much. For me, for writing songs, like I started on the violin when I was young.
Oh, did you?
You know, and I did all my kind of theory and things, and it really informed my guitar playing. But when I look back, if I'd studied more violin, I think I would have lost something. So, like, I picked up my violin again last year because I'd love to be able to play it, but I really don't want to understand completely what my songs are. You know, I don't want to know what key, what time signature, why this bit works, why this bit doesn't work. It should be more mysterious than that. And so I definitely had a fear about knowing too much about music, because there is, in theory, there's rights and wrong ways to do things. But as we all know with any type of art, there's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
You know, a rule comes in play and then suddenly someone around the corner breaks that rule and shows a whole new world to you. You know, if anything, I think it's just habit rather than rules. You know, I think people create habits for themselves and for others, and really you kind of need to shake them off as much as possible.
And also, you know, we've all seen someone of whatever art form who is technically head and shoulders above so many people, but there is zero emotion or heart into it. And for me, I can't connect with that at all, because I connect on a more emotional level than a technical level.
Of course. And do you reckon... Because I recognise that in certain bands or certain singers. Do you recognise that?
I can recognise it in so many things. I remember I took my little boy to the Royal Albert Hall for the first time, and there was a saxophonist on there, and I have no connection with the saxophone or anything like that at all. And this girl came on, and she played the saxophone with so much heart and soul, and she just loved it. And we both went, this is just incredible. Did something right in my gut. Wow. And I've got no frame of reference for anybody playing the saxophone.
Yeah, he's in my top 17 saxophonists.
Can you just put that, that's what I call best of saxophone. Track two, because I love that one. I don't know anything about it, but she was just fantastic.
That's wonderful.
But then again, you know, I've seen actors on stage who are technically brilliant, but I don't feel anything.
Doesn't communicate with you.
Yeah, and I'm sure the same with music. Yeah. So going back to what you said about if you know too much about how you write, then is the emotional side of writing going to take a backseat to the technical side?
Yeah, to the technical side.
And it's a worry, though.
And it's a human, you know, it's a human, not instinct necessarily, but it's human nature that something has to give a little. And for me, I'd always rather just let the technical aspect slip a little and keep the heart, because, you know, that's the stuff I love over the years with books, music, movies, whatever. You know, it's the things that really connect in there that stick with you, and that's what becomes part of your memories. And I think that's also where art really gets supreme value, is when you've somehow managed to make something that makes it sway into someone's life, and before they know it, you've been a part of their life for years and years, and And that's something that we always don't necessarily get to see until the odd time, and someone's like, oh, you know, for us it'll be like, oh, I saw you 15 years ago, and you know, like, what? Wow, you know, when someone saw us 15 years ago, but I can't believe it's you, you know. But you know, it's like that's a nice feel. I've really grown to enjoy that aspect, getting older and kind of when you look back and go, fuck, we've been doing this for quite a while, you know.
Just because we're jumping around the timeline a bit, and I need to pick up on what you just said there. You're obviously enjoying where you are right now.
Yeah, I feel very lucky.
But has there been times since you started where it wasn't as enjoyable and you've thought, yeah, I don't think we're going to carry on doing this now? I think, because all what I always think about is if your art form ceases to become something that you really love and you put your heart and soul into, then, well, why would you bother carrying on doing it? Because then it just becomes a job.
Yeah, and that's the last thing that we didn't want it to ever become a job. There's been...
My hands are very soft for a reason, so yeah.
Oh, my dad and my brother get me... My dad and my brother get hands like sandpaper, and I'm the soft one, you know? You know, it's like dainty hands. So, yeah, you must get it in the neck as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Forgive me, what we seen there?
Just about since you started, and the extreme highs of starting, and then things do tend to pan out a bit. Yeah. So then does the enjoyment go, and do you think, well, we've done this now, we've got to a certain point in our fame, I don't want to carry on doing it?
I think it could have potentially happened. For me, I always try and pursue a slightly different project if that's happening. So...
To do and go and do sort of solo stuff?
Not necessarily solo, even as the band. So say a couple of years ago we did an MTV Unplugged record and gig, and that kind of came at a good time because I felt like I wasn't being particularly fruitful at that point with my songwriting. And actually it was a wonderful little aside that we went and did this acoustic tour. And actually when I came back, my kind of juices were flowing again and I felt restocked. I definitely have... As a band, we kind of became a bigger band on our fourth record, and that record's called Puzzle, and that was about my mum passing away. And I've always had this kind of, I mean, I've talked about this, isn't like a huge reveal, but I've always had like this guilt, a slight guilt that the album that we kind of broke through on was an album that I wrote about my mum passing. And so I think
that's bittersweet.
Yeah, and I think that prohibits me from ever wanting to throw it in, even if I feel at points that I don't have anything to say right now, or myself, Ben and James are in different kind of head spaces and maybe butting heads, then I'm never close to thinking, oh, if this, I'm out of here. But it does take its toll, you know, because I'm so identified with the band and you know, a band is just a band, that's all it is, but really it's so much more to the people in it, you know. It's like, this is my entire life, and criticisms of my band's music or things like that, I take very personally still. And I think it stems from writing a record specifically about my mum passing and kind of everything that's kind of come since then. So I'm still really quite sensitive about my music. I know that's not quite what you were asking, but I just...
No, but it comes under that umbrella, certainly.
Yeah, so like we did the Unplugged, and then last year we got approached by a young filmmaker who wanted to make a movie in a reaction to an album we'd made. So then we did that last year, and that was because at those moments I didn't feel my most creative. I didn't feel like sparks were just happening. I needed someone else to kind of give me a spark.
And pursue a different avenue, but still keep within the banner.
Keep
of the
within
band.
The band. Because myself, Ben and James, we've known each other from when we were 7 years old. And
was it that long?
Yeah, it's a long time. And the boys are twins, obviously. So it's a lot more than just a band. And I think that's part of the reason we have survived so long. We've all been through a lot individually and together. And I think without that real... old school, we are a gang, you know. And I mean, when you're a teenager, you're like, we bleached our hair at the same time, for goodness sake.
Look, we've all seen your various hairstyles over
oh my
years,
god,
Simon.
Don't start.
I mean, we should do a little catalogue of those. I'm sure I'll just put a Flickr book up of all your hairstyles over the years.
Everyone will be spewed, it'll be psychedelic.
Some of them are very successful, others less
not
so.
So much.
But look, it's fine. I was talking to, I remember when I was talking about hairstyles the other day, and I once took in a picture of a very, very good looking skinhead Armani model when I was about 14 to my barber shop. Uh-huh. And I went, "Can you just do that for me, please?" No, I actually didn't say that. I think I said, "Gonna look like that."
and he
went, "No problem." Strimmed it all off. Now I've got, I've got a very long face. I don't see a big skinhead crew cut. I certainly wasn't an Armani model, but I did wear a very woolly hat for the summer.
Oh,
it looked terrible, mate. I couldn't pull it off.
That's so hilarious. I'm taking a picture of Lenny Kravitz and going, "I want my hair like that." It's like, where do we start, young man?
I just want to look like him.
Just
want
to be cool. Yeah, that's so funny. That's exactly what I used to do, taking pictures as well. It's so.
But in a sense, I mean, you're a family. You're an offset of your family, but this is the band. This is the family.
Well,
we are,
and I think, you know, Ben and James have a brother as well, and he worked with us for years, and he now doesn't work with us. But we've got three or four people in our crew that have been with us for 12 to 15 years, and actually, none of us, the three of us, have our own kids, which is just kind of bizarre. It's not been particularly a plan or anything. So if anything, it, we are a family, And that's kind of how you survive, I think, anything in life, is your community, your friends and your family. Because, you know what, even from the outside, when people think things couldn't be going better, there's inevitably something, you know, where everyone's a human, everyone's got good things going on and really shitty things. And it doesn't matter what age you are, where you are in your life. And I think if you don't feel kind of secure amongst the people around you, then things come crumbling down. And so I definitely feel that with myself, Ben and James, because we have that friendship, that at points we can put the band to the side. You know, if there's actually any kind of internal conflict or someone's having a tough time, we actually don't even consider the band. You know, we're not like, "Oh, but what about the band?" We're just turning to old friends again.
Yeah, because without you being friends and human beings, there is no band.
There is
so
no
band. If there's trauma within who we are as people, then it translates into the art, so therefore there's nothing. So
there's
you have to
nothing.
Sort that out first.
And the joy disappears quickly. You know, it's because, as you say, we're so lucky to be doing what we love. But when you do anything for 10 or 20 years, there's points where it does become work and a bit habitual. And I think that's, even in those moments, you still need to remember how valuable and how fortunate you are. Because whenever I've got some friends at home that are musicians and fantastic musicians, haven't never quite had the luck. I mean, Grifter's an unbelievable musician. Grifter's friend John Lees is one of my faves. And it's just little bits of luck here and there. Not that, don't be a musician, man. this is not a recommendation. But, you know, it's like...
I think you should follow your art form,
thank you.
Follow what you need to do in life.
That's exactly it. And don't let anyone tell you can't, you know, as well. I think in this day and age, there's lots of negative sides to social media and things like that, but also there's an awful lot of positives to it, and it's people have opportunity to create things in ways that we couldn't have imagined when we were growing up.
It's true.
And they can create a whole industry of something in your bedroom, and I love that, you know, to just think how sharp kids are. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what age your son is, but
he's 8 and a half.
So he's going to be, in 2 years, he'll know more than probably you've ever known. You know,
he probably knows more now, to be honest.
I know, because it's like when your kid's teaching you stuff, it's like, right, okay, yeah, times have changed. But I have real optimism. This is no longer even an artistic thing. I have a real optimism for our world because of the next generation. I've got nieces and nephews and things, and when I talk to them, they just know so much more than we did. They care so much more than we did. They're aware of the impact of things that they would do.
Yeah.
There's a consequence that they're aware of. And I just, I'm almost like wanting to shake off the kind of start of this millennium. You know, as much as the last 20 years when we've been playing in a band and things have gone well, I think it's time to shake things off, you know, and just kind of remember what we value and what we actually care about. And it's not necessarily opinions and shit. You know, suddenly an opinion's the most valuable thing in the world. And I suffer from it. We will have nice posts online and then someone says something bad and I'm sitting obsessing about it. And it's like, it's just someone's opinion. But But I find myself, I can get myself down in a bit of a, you know, just as I was saying earlier, being a bit sensitive. And it, sometimes my wife will say, but, you know, zoom out, be a bit stoic about this and just step out and think about, you know, actually the lay of the land, how lucky we are, you know, having been healthy and things like that. And, you know, so it's, yeah, you know, so things like this are kind of bleeding into the music from my perspective for the first time ever, you know. And I think that's something that I wouldn't have been able to translate either musically or lyrically a few years ago.
Do you think things like that come with age and experience, though, as well?
Yeah, I do.
Because we're constantly growing and learning who, like, we, whatever we do, is growing and learning as human beings and go, right, well, I need this now in my life. And
yeah.
This is who, this is where I'm at now.
I think things simplify as you get older. Just you kind of you focus in on the things that actually are going to make you happy.
Do you think we choose to do that though, to simplify? Because sometimes I know people, they get older and they go, things are just getting really harder for me.
Oh, really?
But I think if we choose to go, actually, well, these things in the peripheral now, they don't matter. So I'm just going to just close in on
this.
It's
just outside noise. Yeah, maybe it's a. Maybe it's a headspace thing. Maybe there's a comfort that, you know, I'm kind of comfortable in my work, so maybe I can afford to kind of spend time thinking about the other things. And sometimes when people are working week to week and things, you maybe don't, you know, we're fortunate that we can kind of sit and think, I'm about to go on tour for 2 years. You know, we maybe get to perceive things in a slightly different way, perhaps, you know.
But I think it's very important to step back sometimes if... Because I'm always terrified of the walls sort of tumbling down and closing in. If, one, I don't think enough, or I overthink.
How are you sleeping? Because that's when my mind's racing and I struggle.
It really depends what type of day I've had.
So if you're physically shattered from a long shoot or something,
sometimes I can be physically exhausted, but my mind is like a Scalextric track.
And just won't stop. That's the worst. That's just such a frustrating...
Because you just go, I just really want to sleep, man. I just want to sleep, and my mind will not turn off.
And the nature of saying that to yourself just makes it worse, doesn't it? It's like cranking
it
up.
It's like, let's go faster.
I swear some nights that I'm going to sleep, I can literally feel my synapses just exploding, you know? Like, I just feel it, and I'm like... Please shut off. And
what do you do in times like that?
I've actually there's a few things. I've done meditation for 5 years now, like transcendental meditation.
Have you?
Which I picked up. I read about David Lynch doing it years ago, and it always kind of stuck with me.
Well, I went to I was at MIF this year, and I went to hear and see David Lynch do a talk on. Transcendental meditation.
No way.
He was on Skype from the cinema.
Okay.
Yeah, and people were asking a question. And I knew a little bit about it because a good friend of mine is an advocate. And
were you tempted?
Was I tempted? Pre or post? Pre, probably more than I was post.
Okay.
But I certainly wasn't shutting it off. But I was going, I didn't have any frame of reference, so I need a bit more knowledge before I would even attempt to go down that road.
Because there is a commitment involved, you know.
Yeah.
When we'd finished, we made a double album a few years ago, and at that point, Ben, our drummer, he wouldn't mind me saying, he was having a bit of trouble with drinking at that point, and that was the closest the band ever came to breaking up, and it was like day one of making a double album, which for any muses out there, making a double album is exactly twice the amount of work. It's not quicker in any way. It was just and actually at the end of that session, I had a bit of a breakdown actually in tour, and we had to cancel some shows. And
you did, sorry.
Yeah, and at that point, I was at an airport. We just landed in New York, and I just folded. It was really strange. I thought I was having a panic attack, and
so mentally and physically just exhausted.
I couldn't stop kind of crying. I mean, it's a wee bit. It's not nice to talk about, but it's been a bit of a turning point in my life, and that was what made me think I need to find a way to deal with these intense emotions if it comes again. And so straight away, so that was what kind of kicked me into doing meditation. And I feel like it would take, not, God forbid you have, you know, anything forces you to have to do it, but that's the kind of thing. I catered parts of my life because I realised I needed it. And you're right, because it's not just an easy thing that you do 5 minutes every day. It's like two 20-minute kind of sessions, and it takes a little while to really bed in. And but it's really changed my life. I also, if I'm struggling to sleep at night, there's a breathing technique called 4-7-8.
Can you talk to me about this?
Yeah.
This quite...
No, this is just, you can Google this. This is just available online. So you breathe in 4 seconds through your nose, hold your breath for 7 seconds, and then breathe out for 8 seconds through your mouth with your tongue like that.
It's just for listeners, Simon
is
placing his tongue above his bottom teeth towards the hard palate of his mouth.
Yes. Can you picture that?
How he sounds when he's doing it.
But it's remarkable. It is remarkable. See, for those nights, just, you know, if you've got script or anything running through your mind, I swear you do it four, like, see if you make it through 4 or 5 times, you'll feel your whole body. It's something to do with, you get out certain blood, like a certain, you basically reoxygenate your blood or something like that. There's a scientific reason that it works. It's not perhaps as out there as a meditation or something like that. It's very.
Yeah, but still, you know, you say, you use words like out there. I never found it sort of out there. There was a lot of sense that was made when David Lynch was talking about it. And for someone who didn't really know anything about it.
Yeah,
you know, little. And then a friend of mine who's been doing it, how long have you been doing it for now?
That's 5 years, so 2013.
I think he's been doing at least double that.
Okay.
Like, because I was saying, but you're not there, you know, it's very hard to sort of find calm spots where you can just be quiet. And he went, I can do it on a packed train. I can do it anywhere.
Yeah, that's the weird thing, because you can.
Yeah, that's what he said. And the thing is, I believed him. You know, I totally get it.
I did it in the train up here, actually, you know, and just... It's easy enough. People go about their business, and you just kind of slowly, just kind of drift off. And it's really, really help me slow my mind down. You know, I think
it's just so important. I mean, I know we're talking about not sleeping, but sometimes it doesn't have to be about trying to get to sleep when the mind's racing so much.
Exactly. I mean, we're turned on all the time these days. They're not, you know. It's been talked about a lot, but we're all reachable all the time, you know. From the moment you wake up, open your eyes in the morning, you've missed messages, calls, you know, whatever, and you just, there is a real, we kind of have neglected ourselves almost as a species, you know, and progress is so important, but if we're regressing in other ways, I think that can become an issue, you know, which is why I've got so high hopes for the next generation, because they're going to grow up with all this nonsense. It's like it's there, and it's no longer shiny and new and oh my God, how cool is this? It's just a tool.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's when we'll really maximise what technology can do, when it's more of a tool than a bright shiny bit of kit, you know. But it's an unusual time, you know. Maybe it's just getting older, and just maybe that my dad felt exactly the same way as I do now.
I think that sometimes. I went, oh, well, maybe my dad or the generation felt that. I don't know. You just think, no, I think...
No, I think they were lucky.
I don't know. It's like some generations, I think, are more closed off. It's like, I really don't want to be closed off in my thoughts or opinions or what I think I know.
Yeah.
But I'm very open to, oh, really? Because, oh, I've never thought of it like that. Now you're saying that. Like, there's sometimes my son says things to me and I go, wow, that's
yeah, you've hit on something there with it.
That's pretty fucking smart for an 8.5-year-old. You're finding some sort of metaphor for a Godzilla film to the current climate change problem.
Wow,
and you've already explained yourself well.
Yeah, see, that's where we're, every day's a school day, no matter what age you are, isn't it?
Well,
you
know, I know, it, but it truly I think is. Surely it should be, shouldn't it?
It should be.
So why are, when some people are so closed off with their opinions? Yeah. And I don't... You see, I still think there's some people of our generation that are, so I'm not saying it's a past generation.
No, it's
that
not.
Are like
you're
that.
Right, you're right. I think there's probably, in that instance, it's also people have egos involved. You know, no one likes being told they're wrong or what they think is wrong. And I think the, you know, like I was doing a bike training course last week and the
bike
guy,
training course?
Just a motorbike thing. Oh,
are you a motorbiker?
Well, I want to do it. Not in Scotland. I'm not.
Fucking insane. Now, please.
I know. I've been wanting to for years, so I'm just going to get my license and then not actually get a bike, Craig. I promise.
Don't promise me. Promise your wife.
Yeah, I know.
She will not want you out on those roads.
I'm under strict orders, actually. And the guy I was talking to, he was the complete opposite politically and everything, the guy that was teaching me. And we sat and we had a chat, and he didn't change my mind and I didn't change his mind. But at the end, we both kind of said, I'm glad we talked about that. You know, because he told things to me that I was unaware of. He was talking about his history, you know, through the 70s and 80s, and just why he had a certain perspective on certain things. And I was saying, well, with what I do, the people I know, you know, it's like, this is how I view it. Mm. And it was just really quite a nice way, because he didn't get pissed off at me saying, well, I don't agree with that. And I did secretly get pissed off. Because I was like, how can you think that way, you lunatic? But it was quite, you know, it's just those moments where in an online world, that doesn't happen. You know, and again, I don't know, it sounds like I'm digging out social media and all that. I'm not really, but it hides any kind of nuance and it doesn't encourage nuance. And that's why I think people do, if someone says, I don't agree with you, people are happy to get perhaps a little more offended. And I don't think it's, as you say, it's an age thing. Maybe it's always been like that, but just it's been exposed in a new way. And, you know.
They love a jump on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so easy because everybody has their personality or their certain persona on social media, or it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. It's not them.
No, it's a version of yourself you want people to see. I've never had a personal Twitter or a Facebook account, partly because I'm kind of too shy for that. I do start to think, I'm like, oh, well, the stuff I think's interesting is probably stuff I do with my band, so that's out there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's not the spirit of connecting and communicating, but I'm like, no, I don't need to tell anyone that. They don't need to know that I'm doing this today.
Which is why I'm so chuffed that you've done this, because we're not necessarily talking about the band, because the focus is always on the human aspect.
Which I really appreciate.
Which I really love. And the only reason, I think, I went on Twitter years ago, and I didn't really know how to do it. I was going, how do we do this work?
You're far bad at it. You're doing all right, man.
No. And then I said something, I'll tell you off mic, I can't really talk about that. I said something not that great about a certain show that I was doing, but I thought it was a private message. Anyway,
that's 101. No, Craig, that's Twitter 101.
I didn't know. I genuinely didn't know what I was doing, and it wasn't the worst thing in the world. It was certainly my opinion of something of my own work, and then I was advised, yeah, you shouldn't be on here.
Did Did it grow legs? Then I take it in that regard, or.
It grew legs and ran to exactly the wrong people.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But then when I met Griff and we decided to start this, I thought, because I had a larger profile than a brand new podcast that no one's heard. So we used that bounce back and forth. And now it's a really nice balance. And I'm hopefully learning how to use social media in a way that's business like, that's for me and him.
But the thing is, it's an innocent thought that you've put out there back in the day. You know, it's like it's just you know, and no harm meant, or you know, it's just as you say, you're just communicating to your buddies. But then suddenly it's like there's a consequence, and that's what's scary, because you know, regardless of what you said right or wrong,
But it's there. You've said it.
Yeah, and inevitably those things do make their way to the one person that shouldn't hear it. And again, that's, you always sense a little bit of that on
exactly. Line.
Like, oh, I'm going to make sure that they see that you've done, you know. And that's the kind of snidey side of people that can bring out. But having said that, it's the things we're even talking about, it's such small percentages, but the volume of it is just, you know, the empty vessels make the most noise, kind of.
It's really true, though. And if you get involved with that nasty side, and it's very... You see it all the time, and I just sort of kind of scroll past it. I don't know in my life. I mean, we've been very lucky. We've had very limited.
Yeah.
I don't think we've had any negative sort of
get comments. Your negative comments in now, ladies and gentlemen.
So says Simon Neil, Biffy Clyro. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. I'm quoting that. For the, that'll be on our tour posters for next year. Yeah. Get your negative comments in now, kids. But, you know, it ceases to become... last night's fish and chip paper that gets thrown in the bin, it's there.
It's the, I know.
And it gets dragged up now.
Yeah, there's no such thing as kind of in the rear view mirror quite the same way. And I do feel for youngsters when, you know, I think about the amount of times I've been lying in the corner sick from drinking too much or making a fool of myself at parties last one up, you know, and thank goodness that no one was there to post that stuff, you know. And that there's just, that's... why I'm also saying about the next year, they know that there's a consequence to things. Like my nieces, you know, they're kind of slightly, I maybe shouldn't say this, they're kind of underage, but they have a wee drink, but they're not like out at the park getting tanked up the way that perhaps we used to do.
I was.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, that's what we all did.
Because there was nowhere else for us to go.
No other distractions. It was your community, your neighbourhood was... That was what you did. If you wanted a bit of your alone time, you would go out. Now the alone time is this. You know, you can almost have alone time now in a room full of people. And it's kind of tipping.
I'm going to go for the fact that I think going around the park at 6:30, 7 with a bottle of cider is probably more healthy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, you get your vitamin,
please don't
you know,
quote me on that list.
Vitamin D and all that you should get, you know. But yes, I mean, it's a really unusual time, and I'm still trying to, things like social media and things, I'm still trying to kind of slightly navigate, you know, in the way.
Are you in charge of your social media, or is that a record company thing?
I do the socials, and actually my wife Francesca helps out a lot, because I
thought she was. She's very good.
She's great. I know. Yeah, that's why it's better now. I used to spend like 3 days thinking about what caption to put. You know, I'd be like, oh, that sounds, no, I'm trying to be too funny there, and then I would say, oh no, that joke will get missed.
Going back to what we were saying before, though, overthinking.
Overthinking.
I think that comes into play here as well.
Yeah.
Let's not overthink.
Yeah, let's not do... I know, because it's a thankless task. Like, you know, no one else is overthinking. You know, because if I go socialise and then I'll come and say, oh, I shouldn't have said that. You know, I should maybe have... And then Frankie will say to me, do you think that they're sitting thinking about what you've said?
Absolutely not.
No one's thinking about you as much as you are. You know, and that's like a... To me, that's a survival tool, you know, and it is. No one cares as much about what you're kind of up to as you think they do. So if you feel you've embarrassed yourself or this or that, it's never as bad as you think. You know?
It isn't. Yeah. I do want to talk about touring.
Of course.
Because I mean, you know I've got a fair few mates are musicians, and I do worry about them on tour and about the toll it sort of takes on them. Mm-hmm. And these are some people who have got family and they've got lots of kids and they're away from them, but also how they deal with it personally within themselves, because it's hard. It's a tough one, isn't it?
I know. I mean, and it's not, you know, I know it's, anyone that gets to tour is lucky. We're not saying it's... You know, I'm not saying it's a nightmare job, but see at points when you've given 10, 15 years of your life on the road and like 6 or 7 months of every year you're away from home, it's really hard to kind of explain how solitary that can feel, you know, and I'm lucky that Francesca comes on tour with me, and that was because a few years ago, you know, when I had my kind of do, I realised there was a certain few things I needed to change in my life to make this sustainable, you know, and basically... If I hadn't made those changes, I was going to hit the same point 2 years down the line, and then the same point again 2 years down the line.
Can I ask about the changes that you made? I mean, you don't have to tell me. We don't have to go down that path.
No. So it was the... So I started my meditation. I stopped taking any... I still smoke weed.
Right.
But I stopped taking any other kind of...
Class A's.
Class A's. You know, that's also the bad thing about being in tour. You can really get into a bad swing of what is normal, you know, and it can really mess with your psyche.
Quote unquote normal.
Yeah, quote unquote, exactly. Yeah. I mean, no one's normal, you know, forgive me.
I know, I'm just saying, I know exactly what you mean.
So I curbed all that, which was tough because a lot of my friends still like the odd party and that, but they're very respectful. I basically tried to, there was a couple of people in my life that I hadn't quite realised, but that I would feel worse every time I would hang out with them. Friends that I'd had for a long time, and actually, not to sound too cutthroat about it, but after about like a few years of just been not feeling right hanging out with them, I just thought maybe I won't see them for a little while. And actually, I felt, you know, at points I felt my shoulders just coming back and relaxing. And
yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, there's two sides to every story.
Absolutely.
I'm not an easy person to deal with or be friends with. But there was, so I basically kind of upturned my whole life with the boys as well. At that point, I kind of had to, because I've done all the kind of the music, all the creative with the band over the years, you know, at points I've really had to say to the boys, look, I really need help now. This isn't a solo project, you know, and the boys, you know, we're a team. Don't get me wrong, we are a gang. But at that point, having just got through making a double album with another 20 songs that became a third, the next album, in the space of 12 months, we released Opposites in an album called Similarities, and there's like 38 songs on there. And I just almost killed myself. And at that point, Not physically, you know.
I mean, no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I almost broke myself down properly. And at that point, I was like, I just needed help, you know. And it was the first time where I'd actually turned around to my friends and kind of said, I think I need a bit of help here, because you kind of have your ego. And, you know, especially young men in this day and age, we're more aware of it than ever, which is great.
Yeah.
You know,
it's getting so much better, I think.
It needs to, though, yeah. Because, you know, my dad and his generation, it was like, no, you know, you're not going to be finding out how they feel unless they're raging, you know, but
no. And even then, it just comes over as rage. They're not going to go, do you know what? I'm not having a particularly good time right now.
And you wouldn't even find out why they were mad. Or, you know, like, you know, it's just, all right, okay, must have been a bad day, you know. And so it is extremely healthy that people can express themselves now, and that again, that's the positive to social media. See, to be able to reach out to someone that maybe you've even never met and feel that you've got this connection, you're kind of supporting each other in a really unusual way and in a really helpful manner. You know, I think that's that feels right at the moment. But it's a tough. Touring is one of the most fun/damaging things you can do to your psyche, you know, male, female, trans, whatever you are. And that's not specific to men, I don't think.
No.
It does seem like men are the ones that are most stupid that would go on tour.
We know this.
Yeah, we do know this. So we're the idiots that persevere and then, you know, end up falling over and wondering why we've fallen over. I'm almost at the top, you know. So I worry about my friends in tour, people we're in tour with, I worry about, you know, a lot of the boys in our crew have kids and everything, and I'm very aware that when they're away from the other side of the world, it's maybe 12 hours time difference, and they're trying to maintain like a family life and some kind of normalcy for the kids, and that takes real effort and real focus and kind of fortitude, to be honest. I think... Not to like say that being in the band is kind of trickier, but because there's an ego involved and there's like, you know, a kind of an adoration when you're playing the show, you know, that can sometimes bleed into the rest of your day that is really unhealthy. And I always try and really, the show is my most fun part in tours. I'm sure it is for most people on the road, but I really try and shake off the show afterwards. You know, I actually go and I'll sit by myself for like 3/4 of an hour after the show, because I have to try and deflate the ego. This sounds so unglamorous and thing, This is how to survive.
Well, you have to filter it all out.
You have to filter it, or else it's there the whole time, and you're either
then you're not sleeping.
Then you're not exactly. And God bless weed, because see, honestly, if I couldn't smoke a couple of joints after a show,
deny that I'd still be partying as hard as I was and for my sins, or I'd be falling out with people, or I'd have lost my mind. He'd just go and say, I'm out here, this is bollocks. And then suddenly you make an extremely stupid decision off a whim. You know, and that's what happens in tour. That's why bands break up, because you can sometimes, you've been in each other's pockets, and then someone says something and you go, no, fuck you. Yeah. And then it's just, you don't see each other, you know, and it can be so final. And it's,
well,
it's,
we've seen it
with some of the
very
best
well
bands.
Documented.
I know. And you know, we share a couple of friends, and they, it's wonderful when you see, you know, how long they've been doing it, and you do worry about people, you know, and you know, if you're seeing some of your buddies that maybe you haven't seen for a little while, you'll sometimes see closer, whether at the peak or at the trough.
Yeah.
And there's nothing sadder when you see someone you just want to say, are you all right?
Yeah.
You know, and inevitably the answer is, I'm fine. But
we know, like, it's not.
You know, some needs to change, to, you know. But then that's all you can do, is be there for your friend, because it's addictive. What we do as well, you know, going on the road, the only reason you kind of do it is because it is an addictive, like a drug, you know.
I can only speak for me, but like, I have to do what I do, and I'm.
Well, you don't feel yourself. I don't feel like I'm being me. Like, that's a big part of who I am. That's sitting dormant unless I'm doing it.
Do you
feel quite a bit different if you're doing theatre shows? Like, does that
I just try not to do theatre.
Okay. Really? Yeah, okay.
I try not to. No. Oh God, for so many reasons.
Yeah. Did you start in theatre? Is that
I did, but in the, what, 19 years or whatever I've been doing it, no, I do very little theatre.
Okay.
I personally don't feel as comfortable.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Well, it must be. It's a different discipline, really.
Completely.
I mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your headspace must be. I mean, that's perhaps more like a performance.
It feels, sometimes it feels slightly alien to me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. Because it's a different way to inhabit.
Completely. Well, everything. A different way to work, and from the ground up.
For me, with touring, it's the travelling that can sometimes be the toughest bit, the waiting around, spending hours in the van. Is that the toughest part of your job when you're waiting?
No, I'm paid to wait.
Really? Is that just, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, waiting's part of it now.
I mean,
and luckily, I feel so lucky to work with incredible, sort of inspiring people that we sit around and have conversations, certainly not as in-depth as what we've done.
Tonight, I mean, we're having a...
But you get those little snatches, you get those 10 or 15 minutes of somebody's life, or someone goes, do you know what, I'm feeling this today. You get very close and you go, all right, we're being called, I'll tell you later, I'll fill you in later.
Yeah.
But then you never get back to that point because
it's distracted you.
Which, you know, going back to what we spoke about at the beginning when you were talking to me about why I started this, I suppose it's to finish a conversation that we may have started.
Because you had some of your buddies on here, haven't you?
I've had a fair few. It started off like that.
Just sometimes with your friends, it can be tougher. To actually, in a conversation like this, kind of dip below the surface, has it been?
Yeah, no, it's been, you know, as lovely and in depth as this has been. Yeah, it's been incredible.
Well, you're very disarming. I mean, like, you know, I've only met you a couple of times, but you know, you make me feel very relaxed.
Well,
but
even when we first met, it was like, oh God, wow! I think we're going to get on, like, because we were both so happy to see each other.
I love that.
Like, wow, this is brilliant.
It was like two peas in a pod.
It was.
Two peas in a pod.
Simon, I'm so thrilled that you've come on this and done it. We've had this conversation.
I know, thank you.
I really loved it.
I hope I haven't spouted too much nonsense, but
you haven't at all. It's been an absolute joy, and I really mean it. And I really can't lie. It was lovely.
You're a gentleman, Craig. Thanks for having me, brother. And another episode is done. What great company Simon is. He's so warm and funny. He's one of those characters that, you know, there's people that you meet him and you go, God, where have you been? It's like we've known each other for ages. He's just like that, and he's so
smiley. And I really hope all that came across. He's such top fella, and I can't thank him enough for coming to meet us and coming on the podcast. It was a great way to end the year. And this is the end of the episode. Yeah, so look, if you've just joined us and it's your first episode, and you like musicians, go back through the catalogue. We've got loads of great episodes with people. Let's think, Nile Rodgers, John and Laura McClure from Reverend and the Makers, I can't speak, Bill Ryder Jones, Gaz Coombs, Lone Ladies, loads of people. I'm sure I've missed somebody out there. But yeah, go back and pick an episode out, see if you want to get to know someone a little bit better, and I'm sure you will. So you'll know where to find us. We're on all the social medias, at Two Shot Pod. And should we just meet back next Thursday? Okay, well, look, I hope your week back, work, school, college, uni, whatever you're going, whatever you're doing, the transition is nice and smooth. We shall see you on Thursday next week. So until then, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. Thanks so much. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.